say that they did not think it would be done by just an earthly king, whether it's David, Solomon, or whoever, who just gradually conquers the earth. Perhaps like we may have seen to some extent in the history of the earth with the Romans, or the Babylonians, or the Assyrians, or Alexander the Great, or any of those great rulers. They had kind of given up hope that it would happen that way. Instead, they believed that in some way, God would supernaturally intervene and set his people at their rightful place. And so they, all of their talk of this subject and all of their scriptures, that all the verses that we see in the Old Testament in regard to this, can kind of be grouped together with this phrase, the day of the Lord. And when we see in the Old Testament prophecies talk about the day of the Lord, this is encompasses, I think, all of that idea that the Jews had and the hope that they had of someday God's people ruling and reigning as God wanted them to do so. The Jewish people were, and you kind of think of how this fits even your own world view in light of prophecy. The Jewish people, in a way, were unconquerably optimistic. That is, they had an unshakable belief and faith that the day of the Lord would indeed come. That the day would indeed come when God would intervene and step into history and intervene and take his chosen people and set them at a rightful place. At the same, by the same token, the Jewish people were hopelessly pessimistic. And they were pessimistic in this way, that they did not believe and could not see the earth and the world and the people in the earth coming to God. Now, as I think of those two sides of that coin, the optimism and the pessimistic view, I feel that way. I'm optimistic. I am certain that Jesus is coming again. But I am pessimistic in believing that the world is going to get better and better and better before he comes. I don't see that. It's going the wrong direction, if you ask me, for it to be headed, if that's going to be the case. Well, let's read our text with this as a backdrop. Mark chapter 13, verses 28 through 37. For Jesus says, "Now learn a parable of the fig tree. While her branch is yet tender, and putteth forth leaves, you know that summer is near. So you in like manner, when you shall see these things come to pass, know that it is nigh even at the doors. Verily I say unto you that this generation shall not pass till all these things be done. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall not pass away. But of that day and that hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels which are in heaven, neither the Son, but the Father. Take you heed and watch and pray, for you know not when the time is. For the Son of Man is as a man taking a far journey, who left his house and gave authority to his servants, and to every man his work, and commanded the porter to watch. Watch ye therefore, for you know not when the master of the house comes, at evening, or at midnight, or at the cock crowing, or in the morning, lest coming suddenly he find you sleeping. And what I say unto you, I say unto all, watch." In these verses, and these are not the only verses that you will see this, but there is a repeated instruction to watch. To watch. And the very first thing I want to do this morning is to give you a test. See on your outline, we've got this question consists, this test consists of one question. Like all good tests, it's a multiple choice answer. All right? All of your entire grade depends on this one question. Okay, here's the question and the answers. If you've got a pencil, you may want to write these in. Multiple choice question. Here is the question. The repeated instructions in this text we read this morning, the repeated instructions to watch are: A, so that we will not miss any of the greatest celebration and victory party ever seen on earth when Jesus comes again. That is A. The repeated instructions to watch are so that we will not miss any of the greatest celebration and victory party the earth has ever seen, or ever seen on earth when Jesus comes again. Or is the answer B? The repeated instructions to watch are given as a very sober warning, because the coming of the Lord is to bring the most damning and most horrific judgments ever seen on the earth. Let me repeat that. Number B. Repeated instructions to watch are given as a very sober warning, because the coming of the Lord is to bring the most damning and most horrific judgments ever seen on the earth. Or number C. The repeated instructions to watch are so that we will not miss any of the most spectacular and miraculous events to ever happen on the earth. I repeat that one. Repeated instructions to watch are so that we will not miss any of the most spectacular and miraculous events ever happen on the earth. All right, let's have a show of hands. If you think the correct answer is A, let's see your hand. Nobody likes A. If you think the correct answer is B, let's see your hand. We got a lot of people like B. If you think the correct answer is C, I wouldn't raise your hand. B is the answer. The repeated instructions to watch are a very sober warning, because the coming of the Lord is to bring the most damning and the most horrific judgments ever seen on the earth. As we study prophecy, as we study the second coming, I want to just throw out two words for you. Let's just talk about these words for a minute. The word millennium. When you hear the word millennium in relation to Bible prophecy, how would you define that word, the millennium? Period of time. Long period of time. Anybody else? Christy? 1,000 years. The millennium generally is referring to 1,000-year period. Usually, you will hear that word with a few other words, like the millennial reign of Christ. Usually, when we talk about the millennium in relation to the Bible, it's a reference to a period of 1,000 years that it seems that is believed that Christ will reign on the earth. If you're studying eschatology and you're studying Bible prophecy, you may hear that word with some prefixes put on it. I want to give you three. The word pre-millennial. Okay, that word pre means, what does the prefix pre mean? Before or in front of. So premillennial means something that is prior to this millennial reign of Christ. Another prefix that you hear associated with that word is the word post. Post means what? After. So the word postmillennial means something that takes place after the millennial reign of Christ. And you hear sometimes the prefix ah or a millennial. The word, the prefix a or a means what? None. No. Amoral means no morals. Amillennial means no millennial. No millennial reign of Christ. So you can see already, there are three different terms here, and sure enough, different people look and believe certain things about those terms. There are some people who believe that there are events that will take place prior to millennial reign of Christ. Some will believe, in fact, the idea is that Jesus will come again pre-millennial. He will come to this earth before the millennial reign, pre-millennial. Post-millennial means what? That Jesus will come to this earth. Actually, that's not right, is it? He will come to the earth and reign for 1,000 years, but the rapture is what's pre, is it? Is that right? Okay. Well, I'm getting my stories all mixed up here. All right. Some groups that are post-millennial might include, I shouldn't be grouping groups, but I think some perhaps Presbyterians may find it be in the post-millennial group. Most Baptists will be in the pre-millennial group. Amillennial, you know anybody who would be in that group? Church of Christ, sure, they believe there is no millennial reign of Christ. Okay, let me give you a different word. The word tribulation. Tribulation, and when you hear that word in reference to the scriptures and prophecy, what do you think it's referring to? A period of time. How long is that period of time? And did you say, Adina, a time of trouble? Is that what you said? Okay, it's a period of time, usually believed to be 7 years. It's not a good time. It's a time of tribulation. And again, you may hear prefixes put in front of that word. Pre-tribulation. That means in front of the tribulation. And that is reference to what is commonly called the rapture. Some people would say the rapture, they are pre-tribulation. They believe in the pre-tribulation rapture of the church, that the rapture would come prior to this period of tribulation. Some people are post-trib, or post-tribulation. They think that the 7-year period of tribulation and trouble and terrible trials will come. At the end of it, the church will be raptured. Some people are mid-trib. They think that the rapture will occur at the very middle of the tribulation. All right? I grew up in most of my church life, most of my childhood and an adult life in churches that pretty much would line up with these terms. Pre-tribulation, would believe in the pre-tribulation rapture of Christ, the pre-millennial reign of Christ. All right? I grew up that way. I kind of knew the strong points or the arguments, you might say, for that position. When I got grown, I remember reading a book by Gary North. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Gary North. And he had an essay in the back of this book on post-millennials. I read the article. It's a pretty long article, several dozen pages perhaps. And read through it and found myself saying, everything he says makes sense. I can follow his argument. A few years later, I think Susan actually got this book, and I read it, but it's by a guy named Marvin Rosenthal. Anybody familiar with Marvin Rosenthal? He was a Bible teacher, evangelist-type guy, itinerant preacher that would go around, and his ministry pretty much was focused on eschatology. And he was a pre-mill guy. And at some point, him and a friend of his began to study and the scriptures together again. I mean, he was very versed in eschatology. And somewhere along the line, he became convinced that his position wasn't right. And he wrote a book. Susan got this book and I read it. It's called The Pre-Wrath Rapture of the Church. And it is not a pre-tribulation rapture. It is not a post-tribulation rapture. It is not a mid-tribulation rapture. It is what he called a pre-wrath rapture. It is in the course of the tribulation, the church is spared from some of the worst of the calamity that comes. But they're not spared from some of the calamity and catastrophes that people on the earth have experienced for centuries. I read his book, and it made perfect sense to me. I came to the conclusion, almost, that it didn't matter what I read, it was going to make perfect sense to me. And I began to realize, you know, if I am going to get all this settled in my own mind, if I'm going to figure this out and come to my own conclusions, by then I saw that I was going to have to do a thorough study of the book of Revelation, of portions of the book of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, a big portion of the book of Daniel, and of Ezekiel, and of Zechariah, and of Amos, and of Isaiah. But I had to go to work tomorrow. And I had a sermon to prepare in Galatians next week. And I had two boys to raise. And I've never completed that study. In fact, I've never started. But here we are in this, and I want to give you just some things that are in these verses. The last two sermons and this sermon will certainly not cover all of the events of eschatology that comes along, but I want to give you some principles. And the first one is this. That Marshall said this 2 weeks ago, and it just stood out to me. And I'm not going to use his exact words because I don't remember. But, and this is under the introduction, the first point. He didn't say it this way. I'm saying it this way, that when we read the scriptures and when you read prophecy, the emphasis on the prophecy is not to get you enough information that you can make a chart, but the emphasis is to give you instructions on how to live in light of the prophecy. How many times in our few verses this morning did you catch the imperative, the command, watch? Here is what you do. You watch. Just like a fig tree, when you see it blooming, you know it's fixing to bear fruit, or time is here. When you see these things happen, watch. Take care. Be alert. Watch. The emphasis is on how we are to respond to the prophecy. Not to dwell on, do we have every I dotted and every T crossed with how it's all laid out. The emphasis is to see the warning and to watch. Marshall brought that out and it just stood out to me. That is exactly the case. Another question that I want to pose to you is, what should our normal attitude toward the second coming of Christ be? All of my life, I say all of my life, since I've been old enough to kind of have some knowledge of things, you know, you hear people talk about, and I'd hear people talk about how they longed for Jesus to come again, and how they wished that Christ would come, and talked about it such a way, and what I remember is feeling, I don't feel that way. And thinking, something must be wrong with me. Christians ought to want Jesus to come again. Christians ought to want to go to heaven. What is wrong with me? A number of years ago, I think I may have, some of you may have heard this story, but Daniel may can help me with a few facts here. We was doing some work, and Dan and Mark were pretty small guys, but they were with me working. And for an older lady named Miss Klementkoff. And Miss Klementkoff, if I remember right, Dan, if you just feel free to correct me if my facts aren't right, but I remember her being like almost 90 years old at the time. And we were actually hired by her daughter and son-in-law to build a carport or something on this mobile home. And every day, promptly at 10 o'clock, she would make us stop working, come in the house, and drink coffee with her. She was from France. She was a Belgian lady, if I remember right. The first day we went in the house, and she had a pitcher of coffee so thick that it looked like used motor oil. I mean, it was thick and black. And she had another pitcher of hot water, boiling hot water. And she'd pour us a little of the coffee in there and then pour the hot water in there with it, and it thinned it down where it was pretty much right. Well, the first day, she was paying attention as to how we liked our coffee. Next day, if I remember correctly, she made it the way we liked it. Miss Klementkoff, we soon learned, and was involved in World War II in Belgium and France. And was she married during that time, Dan? Do you remember? I can't remember, but there was something about her family was involved in escaping from Hitler, escaping from the Nazis. And she would tell us stories about being in Belgium and in France and the running and the hiding that they were doing during World War II. Well, it wasn't but 2 or 3 days of this till when 10 o'clock came around, I was ready to go inside and talk to this lady. I was enjoying. And I liked this lady. Somehow I found out she was a Roman Catholic. And she wasn't just your ordinary Roman Catholic. Whatever, and I never knew there was more than one type of Roman Catholic, but she could not go to this Roman Catholic church in Heber Springs. It wasn't the right kind. Her daughter had to take her to Little Rock so she could say Mass at the proper kind of Roman Catholic church. Tell you all that to tell you this. One day I was there talking to her, and we were talking about Jesus coming. I don't know how we got on the subject. I remember intentionally directing the conversation to this. And I said, what does your church, how do you look at when Jesus comes again? Here was her answer. I had never heard anybody say this. She said, it is a terrible, it is an awful time. You know, she's right. She is right. Now, I could qualify that by saying it's not that way for the Christian. And you would understand. But the instructions and the warnings that we see repeatedly, over and over, throughout the entire Bible, about prophetic events, about the coming of the Lord, none of them present it as a wonderful time. It is an awful day of judgment that we are called to watch out for. Let me ask you another question. I need you to participate, okay? How many of you here, because I want to illustrate for you this, the struggle within my own being about how I should look at the coming of Christ. Okay? So you help me. Raise your hand for an answer, all right? How many of you here today want to go to heaven? Okay? You have to think about that very long. Okay? Now I want you to answer again. I'm going to ask you the same question. But the way you answer is going to be part of your answer. I say, how many of you want to go to heaven? If you're not real sure about it, and maybe you do, and you guess so, then kind of ease your hand up slow. All right? If you're pretty sure you want to go to heaven, raise your hand. If you are really, 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 really sure you want to go to heaven, get your hand up real fast. Okay? Now, I'm going to ask again, and you answer the proper way, okay? Every how you feel, you answer. Ready? How many of you want to go to heaven? All right, that's all pretty fast. I'm going to ask you another question, just a little different. Why don't you answer the same way, okay? If you're not real sure, raise your hand up slow. If you're real sure, jerk it up real fast. How many of you want to go to heaven right now? Right now. Everybody see that? Everybody see my knife? If you want to go to heaven right now, come on. Would your answer be different? You know what would happen, really? If I ask you that question, we all laugh. But if Ray were to stand up and say, I'm ready to go. Slit my throat, kill me, cut me, let me have a heart attack, let me die in a train wreck, I don't care. I want to go to heaven right now. What would you think? Here's what we'd think. At least I would. I bet you would too. I would think, right? What is wrong? Is life so bad? Is there something going on in your life that we're unaware of? Is Leslie that hard to live with? Right? Listen, we all want to go to heaven, but none of us wants to die. We want to go to heaven, and we know with our mind that to die is gain. But when my body is threatened, instinctively I fight it because it is my nature to want to live. I think that that's part of this struggle that we have with knowing with our mind that heaven is gain and being with the Lord is a wonderful thing. Yes, we want it. We never experienced it. We not really know what it's exactly like, but we know it's good. But at the same time, we naturally want to live. Two or three things I'll point out from these verses, and then we're gonna go. Look at verses 28 to 31. This will be number three. Jesus gives a parable and uses an illustration, an analogy of a fig tree. He says, now hear the parable of the fig tree. When her branch is yet tender and she puts forth leaves, this tells you something. You know that summer is near. All right? I like springtime. I'm ready for spring. Every time it snows, I'm ready for spring. I don't mind those 10-inch snows as long as they can be gone and about 30 minutes. I'm ready. I'm ready for spring. And when the trees start budding out, when the grass starts to turn green, when, you know, your garden, you're ready to plant your garden, and your flowers begin to poke up, and the irises start to put on those sharp green shoots and start coming up. We know that spring is getting near. We know it. We're not in doubt about it. We don't have to look at the calendar. We know there might be a late frost, all this good stuff, but we know it is coming close to the time when spring is here. Now, what is the analogy that Jesus is making here? He said, when you see these things happen, you know that it is near, even at the doors. What are the things? Let me tell you what it is. It is evil. Here is my statement. The presence of evil is a sure sign that Jesus is coming. I don't mean he's coming now, but Jesus is coming because there is sin in the world, because there is evil in the world. Justice will surely come after evil. God will judge sin. God will judge evil. And the fact that we see evil in the world, you can rest assured that God someday will come and take care of that. He will make that right. He will set things straight. And this is the primary reason the prophecies that tell about the day of the Lord coming are gruesome things. Because it is a coming of judgment. And when we look around and we see evil, we look around and we see, and today is the day of the to remind us of the evils of abortion. And when we see hundreds of thousands of children's lives being taken, it ought to remind us that someday God is coming to judge those people. And to judge those nations. And to judge evil. And it's not going to be a pretty picture. The presence of evil means that judgment is coming. Just like the presence of buds and blooms on our plants means that spring is near. Number four. There is no last second time to prepare for His coming. When I was about 13 or 14 years old, my family went to Southside Baptist Church. Everyone know where that is, going down the mountain into Heber. Southern Baptist Church, it was about the size of this church, maybe as far as numbers, maybe a little bigger, not much. I was in a junior Sunday school class with junior high boys. There was five or six of us guys in this class. And this one particular day, it had been raining, and this building had a flat roof at that time. They put a roof on it, rafters on it since then. And there was a leak right in our Sunday school class. And it had rained the night before, and there was a puddle of water in the floor about this big around, right in the middle of the floor. It was a tile floor, concrete slab, tile floor, puddle of water in it. Five or six of us boys in this class, the teacher was there, the teacher took the roll and did whatever he did, and he carried the roll and the offering or whatever down to the Sunday school superintendent. We were in Sunday school class. And he went down the hallway. Well, while he was gone, we began to get a little rowdy. And it was pretty rowdy. It was hooping and hollering. I don't know what's going on, but I know it was loud. And it was just people, you know, just cutting up and doing stuff. Well, I took it upon myself to be the watchman. So I go to the door after I figure, you know, he's going to be coming back pretty soon. I'm going to look out the door. If I see him coming, I'll yell and everybody get in your seat. So I ease that and over to the door, and I open the door and stick my head out and look down this long hallway. Well, he turns the corner. Here he comes. I jump back in, slam the door shut, say, here he comes, and start running to my seat. And I slip in this water in the floor and bang my chin on the seat of a folding, metal folding chair. Just bang. And you know how when you cut anywhere on your face, it just bleeds like a stuck hog. Well, here I am, just bleeding profusely, and sitting in my chair, bleeding, and everybody else is in their chair, and he walks in. Well, he says, uh-huh. And he looked at me and said, you fell down and cut yourself running back to your seat, didn't you? How do you know that? Because he's grown. And I'm just a stupid 13-year-old boy that thinks grown-ups don't know anything. Now listen, I was watching for his coming. Now listen to this. At the moment I saw him coming, he saw me. There was no time for warning. There was no time for preparation. At the same instant we knew he was coming, he saw me. At the same instant we knew he was coming, he could hear the raucous and the rowdiness going on. It was too late. It is that way when Jesus comes again. When we know he's coming, he's here. You will not have time to get your act together. You will not have time to straighten up. You will not have time to repent. He will be here. No one knows when he is coming. The angels do not know. Jesus said, I do not know. Nobody on earth knows, only the Father. And when he comes, he's here. There will be no time to get ready. When you know he's here, he's here. And then the last thing, number five, watching for his coming is not a passive thing. We have work to do. He tells the story of a man who goes into a far country. And what does he do? He leaves his house. He gives instructions to his servants. It says to every man his work. Everyone has a task to do for this landowner, for this man. And you are to be busy doing their work. It is the same with us. We are to watch for his coming. But that obviously does not mean, as some over the years some people have done, have sold everything they have and they think he's coming a certain day, so they go park themselves on a hillside somewhere, so they get a, I don't know what, why they do it, they're just waiting. So he'll see them, I guess, or so, I don't know. They're there waiting on a hill. No. We are to go about our business. We're to go about our personal business. We're to plan as if there is tomorrow, but pray and live as if there is no today. No, there's only today. We are to watch, but we are to work. We're to go about our spiritual lives. We're to go about our personal lives. Working, doing what God has called us to do. The very last verse, he says, and I thought this might be something good for the church to do. He says, and what I say to you, I say to all. Watch. You know, it might be good for us. As we greet one another, as Christian brothers and sisters. And as we depart each other's company, to depart with these words, or with this word, watch. Let's pray. God, help us to watch. God, help us to, as we watch, to grow and to live and to please you.